Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Red Shirts and Runabouts. This is episode 78, I believe, is what we're at here. Yeah, 78. And this is a special episode because we get to welcome back my co-host, my co-captain in crime, Greg.
It is great to be back. I'm just sad that I've had to miss so much time. I know real life happens and work happens, but I can still miss it.
You know, I mean, I think my feelings would be hurt if you didn't miss it at all, but, you know, I'm glad to have you back.
Oh, it's great to be back, and, you know, been listening to the show while I've been out, and it's, you know, it's something I love. It's a hobby I really enjoy, so, but it's also a reminder for our listeners out there that sometimes you have to take care of yourselves and your employment. That's understood.
Yeah, you know, jobs, the paying jobs have to come first a lot of the times. You know, we do this for fun. We do this because we love Trek. And, you know, you can't not pay the bills. So I get it.
Yeah. But with all this new Star Trek stuff and with, you know, with changes that's going on for me personally, getting able to record more, it's time to start talking Trek again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very excited about that. And, I guess we'll just do a quick review of what our schedule plans are so people have an idea of what we're doing. So a while back, and this is a little bit ago, I started a little series while Greg was away called Prepping for Picard, where I took my list of my top 20 quintessential Picard episodes that I thought a person should watch or rewatch to kind of prepare for the Picard show coming up in January. And we didn't get very far on that. We did two episodes. We did Encounter at Farpoint and Conspiracy, both season one episodes. Well, we now have a release date for Picard. It's a little bit sooner than I had anticipated, actually. So we have a slightly different plan. In addition to recording, Ray and I will record reviews of the Short Treks episodes. We already did the first two episodes from season two, Q&A, and The Trouble with Edward. So you can go listen to those, but we're going to do those. And then Greg and I, and then Ray may join us for some of these, are going to continue prepping for Picard in a slightly different format. So today we will be reviewing the only season two episode that made my list, which is Measure of a Man, or The Measure of a Man, really. And then after that, we are going to do all of season three, which is going to include three episodes, Yesterday's Enterprise, Captain's Holiday, and Sarek. Now, for those people who know the season might be asking about The Best of Both Worlds, we're going to pull that two-parter into season four. So we're going to do one episode per season. So season three will have three episodes. Season four will actually end up with four episodes if you count the two-part Best of Both Worlds. And so that's going to take us into, you know, into November. We're going to do the Short Trek Ask Not basically start where we're going to split season five and six into two-part episodes there. And that's kind of how we'll keep going. And we'll finish up with season seven the first week of January, which gives us a week to review the Short Treks Children of Mars and then do kind of a final thoughts prepping ready for Picard before episode one. So, yeah, that is what our plan is going to be. We are actually going to take next week off. This is kind of a week for us to reset, get back on track, and then we will be back the following week on 11/5, November 5th, for our season three of prepping for Picard. So I know that was a lot of mumble jumbo, but you can go out to our website or look in the show notes for my list of the top 20 Picard episodes so you can kind of watch ahead. And in case you're curious or you might remember, we actually talked a little bit about The Measure of a Man way, way back on episode 35 when we were doing Mech Buzz. And so we did, it was the best Riker episodes, and we had the Icarus Factor, which I believe that was Jeremy's pick, and then I picked Measure of a Man. Do you remember that at all, Greg?
I do remember some very interesting discussions on the best of Riker, but it was a good discussion.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny that now, basically, almost about twice as many episodes later, we're coming back to it from Picard's angle. So.
Oh yeah, no, it's a good discussion and it's fun to reference, and even your comment on the good discussion on our schedule. I mean, schedules for podcasts are important. There's a lot of podcasts you and I follow, and you know, if they go dark and we don't hear from the creators, we get a little anxious, wondering when they're going to come back. So. I think given our fans out there, the schedule is important.
Well, thanks. Well, I went through all that stuff, and you know, you can reach out to us at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter if you have any questions about it. But yeah, I guess before we kick things off with The Measure of a Man, is there anything in the Trek world, Greg, that you've wanted to talk about, but since you were busy, you couldn't? Is there anything on your mind?
Well, for any of the Trek gamers out there that like Star Trek strategy games, they just released a massive patch for Star Trek New Horizons, which is a mod for a game called Stellaris. And they radically added a whole bunch of information and material for the Terran universe. They upgraded the mod, they updated to a whole bunch of new patches that the base game has come out with. And it's still arguably, like, you flip through most magazines that talk about strategy games, it's like the greatest Star Trek strategy game ever made, and it's not even made by, like, a company. It's just, you know, 10 people. But the quality content is amazing, and it's tough, but, you know, it's fun. You know, you get the, they have, I think, 83, or it's either 83 or, like, 90, it's like 93 or 83, of, like, confirmed, like, races from Star Trek universe that are in the game. And they have animated portraits. A lot of them have their own ship designs. It's for a bunch of just, you know, college young adults in a basement making a mod. They did a damn good job making a Star Trek game.
Man, that's really cool. So, okay, so I've never played Stellaris. Is this like an official thing or is this just like a fan mod?
It is entirely a fan modification.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I'm glad that they've been able to do this then. So you say it's a strategy game. Do you mean, like, is it an RTS? Is it a turn-based? What are we looking at?
It's more of, think, like, grand strategy on a galactic stage. It's live, so it's not turn-based, so it's real-time. The Star Trek New Horizons game starts you off, I think, in 2150. So before the you're not the Federation yet. You're just United Earth. Or it's like 2156, because you start off as United Earth. And the only other race you know of is the Vulcans at the time. And it's all about expanding into the galaxy. And you immediately meet the Andorians and you meet the Tellarites. And like all of the stuff that from Star Trek lore they have actually included in the game. And they've included things such as, you know, the Zindi incident and all the probe stuff and the Delphic Expanse. And, you know, they've gone out of their way. They are Star Trek fans that are simultaneously amazing computer engineers.
Well, that's awesome. Fan productions can be really cool. I mean, it takes a lot of passion on top of course, the ability to develop a video game to do that.
Even the main company that made Stellaris has like commented on them, but they still have to comment carefully because a bunch of guys or a bunch of men and women making a mod is one thing, but if the company starts commenting on it, they got to worry about all that copyright stuff. So the companies, you know, made the comments like, oh, look, check out this great fan production, blah, blah, blah. But they leave it very generic because they don't want to, you know, nobody wants to risk the CBS wrath.
Right. Yeah. And we know that that's definitely been big, especially recently. So I'm not too surprised. Not too surprised at all.
But that's really the only Star Trek stuff I've been wanting to talk about. I mean, the new Discovery trailer's out. The new Picard trailer's out, obviously. I think they both look good. Compliments to Michael Burnham's hairstylist, 1,000 years in the future. They are doing damn good for being, you know, isolated. It's
yeah, I always pick up on, really cool.
I always pick up on funny stuff like that. Like even Picard in the new trailer, who literally looks like a week older than when he left Next Generation. it's like somehow he looks younger than when they aged him for All Good Things. So Patrick Stewart, yeah. Whatever you're doing, it's working.
You know, I was thinking about that actually. Really, Riker is the only one. Well, Jonathan Frakes, who really looks like what they aged him up to be in All Good Things. Everybody else doesn't look that old in real time.
Yeah, Marina Sirtis looked. I mean, she's always been beautiful, but she still maintains that Troy allure that she always had. And she knocks it out of the park. And Riker, you know, I always love watching my friends on Facebook talking like, Riker's even hotter because he's a dad now. I'm like, oh, you are a weird bunch of fans, but I love you anyways.
Fantastic. Well, yeah. So, I mean, the only new thing for me in the Trek world is I've been doing a rewatch of DS9. And I got to season 4. And I had just forgotten like how amazingly good that premiere is, that 2-part premiere, The Way of the Warrior, I think is what it's called. And, you know, we get Martok and Galeron and Worf shows up and Sisko gets the haircut that he always wanted. And so like I loved it so much that I made Ray watch it with me the following day because I was like, you have to just see this episode. And after it was over, she's like, yeah, okay, we're watching the rest of this together. And so
DS9 is obviously, it's my favorite Trek show because I actually started a rewatch after seeing you talk about it.
Mm.
But yeah, The Way of the Warrior, holy cow, that is some of the best Trek television since Best of Both Worlds.
Yeah, I mean, they pull out a lot of stops. It must have been an expensive episode to make when you think about all the extras they had to have, especially in Klingon garb and all the ships. And I mean, it's a cool story. And
I never get tired of hearing Sisko explain, well, I've got 5,000 photon torpedoes. For some reason, that line is just like I just try to interpret that in real life. Like if there's enemy A attacking us and, you know, Admiral Derek's like, well, I got 5,000 missiles ready to fire at you. It's like, holy cow. Like, even think, like, that's okay. I quit.
It's a lot. It is a lot. They really beef up DS9 for season 4. And then to continue things, the episode after that is The Visitor, which is the episode a lot of people have been sharing the photo around of Nog as a captain in the future. And, you know, so that I got to watch that episode is a powerful one too. So, I mean, season 4 just starts off so strong. So yeah, totally tied into it now.
Well, the episode I'm on is Duet, which is one of the greatest Star Trek episodes of all series of all time with, you know, the Cardassian and the Cardassian relationship with Major Kira. It's, you know, so if any Trek fans out there haven't watched DS9, you have to watch the series. Just stop listening to us right now. Watch it. But keep listening to us when you're driving to work.
Right. DS9 is wonderful. So the last thing I'm going to say before we move on to The Measure of a Man officially is if you are looking to talk with us or some other Trek fans in a positive community, I actually decided to start my own Facebook Star Trek group. It's called Red Shirts and Runabouts Forum to kind of wrap it around the show, but it's really just a positive Star Trek community. We're pretty small right now, but please consider joining and talking with us. It's just facebook.com/groups/redshirtsandrunabouts. Or, you know, I'll be sharing the link on our Twitter and things like that, but come talk to us out there if you would like. Okay, so Greg, let's do this. The Measure of a Man, Picard kind of focused. Where would you like to start?
I just want to open up with the, I would argue that Measure of a Man is, to me personally, maybe one of the top five Star Trek episodes ever made because of the topics it talks about, the acting, the engagement, the importance, how much it builds. It simultaneously builds Picard, Riker, and Data's characters into so much more than they were when this episode started that you can see in this episode what the next, you know, what the next five seasons are going to be. You see it in Measure of a Man.
I think that's fair. You know, there's a lot of lists out there of, you know, people's top five episodes of TNG specifically and things like that. And, you know, usually you end up with Inner Light, Darmok, the Best of Both Worlds. Those usually end up in the top five for everybody. But I feel like The Measure of a Man is overlooked because of how serious it is. Because the other episodes have some sense of fun to them, right? There's excitement, there's adventure. But The Measure of a Man is arguably the most serious episode of TNG.
It's one of the most serious. And even think about something as basic as the set design was simple because they're in what, like five different rooms in the whole episode and that's it?
It's not much. Yeah. I mean, you're right. They had to build that little conference room that they have the hearing in. And that's basically the only new piece. There's, I guess, the lounge on the Starbase. But this episode is kind of the quintessential boardroom Star Trek episode, right? There's no battles, there's no aliens, there's no action of really any kind. There's really just analysis of what it means to be alive, what does it mean to be sentient, what does it mean to be property, which is a key word that we'll talk about. And I think you're right. I think this is absolutely one of TNG's best episodes. And I have a hard time ranking, so I don't know if it would be number one, but it's probably the most important episode as far as real life consequences.
Well, and that's something you and I have talked about, and Jeremy and I and you and Ray have talked about, is so much of Star Trek, all the series, have been commenting on social strata across the world. And this is something that, you know, you go on Google or you go on Twitter, and Boston Dynamics every year is making a more advanced robot than the year before. To the point where they can jump and they can twirl and they can do all this stuff. It's getting to the point where, you know, I don't think we're anywhere near true AI. But something is happening in this world when it comes to technology and robotics. And so, you know, the whole premise of Measure of a Man, you know, a Starfleet officer wanting to disassemble another officer to try to build more of them. Think of how horrifying it would be if it was reversed. If it was, well, Lieutenant Derek Mayer turns out to have a certain gene that makes him able to withstand heat better. So, Derek, we want to take your DNA and start cloning it and putting it in other humans. Like, everybody would be horrified by that concept. The idea of genetic engineering is horrifying in Star Trek because of the eugenics wars. But the idea of taking Data and just disassembling them and making copies, like, certain members of Starfleet think that's a great idea.
Yeah, it's such a powerful message. There's one conversation that I think sums up the entire thing, and it's on purpose, but it's still a very powerful moment. It's the conversation between Guinan and Picard in 10 Forward, where she basically gets Picard, you know, to walk to the point of realizing that the conversation is really about slavery. Right, it's not really about what Data is or what more Datas would be. That's not even what the conversation is about, right? Because, you know, she says, you know, that they're talking about whole generations of disposable people, and his final reaction to that. And I'm just going to read it real quick because it's probably the most important line that he says in the episode, which is. And so he says, you're talking about slavery. And she responds with, I think that's a little harsh. So he says, I don't think that's a little harsh. I think that's the truth. But that's a truth that we have obscured behind a comfortable, easy euphemism, property. But that's not the issue at all, is it? right? And so that's, it's about, the whole episode is about creating essentially a slave labor force of androids. And is it okay to do that because they're not alive like you and I are alive, right? Voyager touches on this much later, of course, with the Dr. EMH, but that's where this concept comes from of what does it mean to be sentient and alive, and at what point does that become slavery?
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. And I always try to caution myself about real-world politics in Star Trek, but Star Trek touches on so much of it. And, you know, we just had a week and a half ago, or 2 weeks ago, or no, excuse me, last week, a very controversial federal holiday in Columbus Day. And the reason that that rings true with me is I just recently rewatched Measure of a Man and the slavery aspect. You know, a historical figure, Bartolomé de las Casas, gets a lot of credit for, you know, pounding on Columbus and all the stuff Columbus did, et cetera, et cetera. But de las Casas was one of the first creators of the triangle trade in the Atlantic. So he didn't like Columbus, but he helped create the whole African slave trade network. And you can see that in what Picard is talking about, because that quote you just said of, you know, you're talking about slavery, and, you know, Guinan pushes back, and she pushes back on purpose to see how far Picard's going to go. And Picard's absolutely, he's like, no, this is definitely about slavery, disposable people. It's a real world aspect of our history we've had to deal with, and they're still dealing with it in Star Trek.
And I think for those who either haven't seen the Picard trailer yet or maybe missed it, I think this conversation in particular and this episode in particular rings through that time frame, because we see a shot of what appears to be androids with numbers barcoded onto their foreheads that certainly looks a hell of a lot like exactly what Picard and Guinan were trying to avoid in this episode. A entire workforce of android slaves.
And I love the Star Trek community, because I love how all of us are calling them, like, oh, those look like Maddox type androids from Bruce Maddox from Measure of a Man.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I that's not an accident. You know, obviously we haven't seen the show quite yet, but I don't think that's an accident. I think that it's very much a tie-in to this episode in particular, because of how significant it is to who Picard is as a character. The way we see him act in Star Trek Insurrection about the Baku is a straight extension of what he is saying here. And if anything, over time, he takes this type of thing even more seriously and more to heart, and will lay his career and life down on the line to avoid these types of things from happening.
Yeah, and it also, again, just, we've already seen it in season one and two, of course, but it reconfirms how far he is willing to go to defend his crew, which is something that you and I have talked about in other episodes. As generic humans from the Midwest, we look to powerful leaders in our environment to protect us and support us. And that's something that just gets reinforced in this episode, again, that Picard doesn't, you know, he doesn't just use big words and big ideas to impress people. He means everything he says.
He does. And, you know, of course, it doesn't hurt that you're giving these lines to, you know, Patrick Stewart, who is a renowned stage actor, Shakespearean actor, and can really bring power to those lines. But, you know, this episode is a showcase for who he is. The entire episode is him trying to find his way through the situation. Because when we start off with this episode, Picard doesn't see you.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Much of a problem with the situation. You know, he obviously wishes Maddox was more competent and Data was more confident. But he's basically telling Data just to do it. And, you know, it's a bummer, but it's part of your duty. And that's where we begin in this episode. And then we end it with this concept being just truly ethically and morally wrong. And I like being able to see that progression of Picard throughout this episode.
Well, and that's something, again, we've talked about on the show that I think Discovery has somewhat struggled with as character growth. And again, it's only two seasons, so we don't have a full sense of judgment yet. But even in one episode, you saw growth. You even saw growth in Bruce Maddox through, even though the whole episode, and spoilers if you haven't seen Measure of a Man, is Picard, right. Picard's able to prove that Data has the right to choose, essentially. And Bruce Maddox tells him, he's like, I'm going to delay the transfer, or I'm going to stop the transfer request. I'm blah, blah, blah. And Data looks at him and says, you know, continue your work. And when things are ready, you know, I might be able to help you out. And you can see Bruce Maddox even grows in the episode, where in the beginning of the episode, he didn't care what Data thought at all, at all. And after the trial, maybe he's a good Starfleet officer following orders. But the moment Data tells him to continue his work, you can see changes in Bruce Maddox's facial expression, the way he's holding his body. And that's even a change in Data as well. Data's like, this could be good for us. Continue what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think in that exact scene that you're talking about, one of the biggest signs of Maddox's change is the way he refers to Data. Because when Data leaves, you know, he says that he, I think the line is, he truly is remarkable. And, you know, that's when the Admiral, she straight up says, or I guess, well, she's not an Admiral. She's the JAG officer. She's still a captain. But she says, you didn't call him it. Because the entire episode, Maddox always refers to Data as an it. And in this context, that was always meant to be derogatory.
It was absolutely right? meant to. If you or I referred to like another human being as it, it's basically over for me professionally if I were to do that. I mean, just saying it.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, if I see a dog, I might ask the owner of the dog, you know, what's its name? Because I don't know if it's a male or a female dog, right? But this was done purposefully because Maddox didn't see Data as an equal life form, right? And that's where things are, that's the whole crux of the episode, is that Maddox saw himself as superior, as a superior life form being that deserved living rights that Data didn't, right? And by the end of the episode, Maddox is forced to at least consider the possibility that he was wrong. And again, it goes back to something Picard does. It's the height of the argument. It's the height of, it's like basically the climax of the episode, where they're in closing statements, and, or not closing statements, but he's cross-examining Maddox. Picard's cross-examining Maddox, and he's asking Maddox, what is Data? Right? Because there's these three criteria for sentience that Maddox lays out for us in the episode. And Picard's been able to prove that Data fits at least two of those three, with the third one being consciousness, right? That you have to be conscious. You have to have a consciousness. But what even is that? How do you define what that is? How do you know that I have that? How do you know that you have that? How do any of us know that any of us have that, right? We just believe that we do because we do as a group. So Picard basically lays out and he says, you know, so you see he's met two of your three criteria for sentience. So what if he meets the third, consciousness, and even the smallest degree? What is he then? I don't know. Do you? And that was the point, that you can't prove that you have the thing that you claim Data doesn't have.
Yeah, I mean, it's that, aside from the whole episode, that scene is just so, it's so powerful because of the ramifications it has on what human history is like, when, whether it was discussing the rights of African Americans or Native persons or refugees or women's right to choose. I mean, that whole line is, it's just so powerful. And the other reason I say it's so powerful is that little portion of the story has been replicated in multiple other medias, other shows, movies, video games have taken it. I've been replaying a game called Mass Effect, and there's a 10-second scene in the game where a robot species rebelled against an organic species, and the rebellion started because one of the machines looked at its creator and said, "Does this unit have a soul?" And I'm like, that's from Star Trek. I'm like, that phrase is from this episode when the JAG officer says, you know, we're all dancing around the same discussion of, does Data have a soul? And she's like, I don't know. I don't know if I have a soul. And It's just so powerful because like you and I have been talking about, the impact on just regular human society and human history, and it lays the groundwork for so many more discussions that happen in Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sums it up really well. It's about asking those hard questions. It's about, you know, using allegory sometimes more on the nose than other times to make us look at ourselves, right? You go way back to the TOS episode. Of course, I'm drawing a blank on the name of it now, but it's the one with the species where they're black on one side and white on the other side, and then the other part of the species is flipped.
Oh yeah, now that Let This Be Your Last Battlefield.
Thank you. Let This Be Your Last Battlefield. And my head kept going Turnabout Intruder, and I'm like, well, that's wrong.
Although that sounds like an amazing episode.
But yeah, I mean, that obviously was an allegory for racism, maybe a little bit more on the nose. And in this case, this is a similar concept, right? This is about having rights as a living being and about slavery and what it means to be property. It's even kind of a meta conversation on what Star Trek's mission is, right? Because the opening sequence to the show is to seek out new life and new civilizations. And Picard's got that line in the episode where he says, "Starfleet was founded to seek out new life. Well, there it sits." Right? And so that, in a way, was Star Trek looking at itself and saying, this is what we're about.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even... There's nothing I can add to your statement that makes it any better, because you're damn right. It's the tagline of the show, to seek out new civilizations. That's what Star Trek is.
Since the beginning. You know, that was the original thing, too. And so... And Picard being the one to deliver those lines shows you who he is, what he represents. And in the Picard trailer, we see him going to Starfleet headquarters as a visitor because he's retired now, trying to push Starfleet to do these things again, to do the right thing, to protect life. And he's getting pushback in the trailer. You know, that admiral who we don't know who she is yet. There's some theories, of course, but she says that this isn't your house anymore. And that's what we're going to see the show's about, is that that's not what's going to stop him, right? He's not going to let his lack of a uniform, his lack of a commission or a rank stop him from doing the right thing.
Yeah. And even this episode alone, you can see so many other touches of Next Generation where it harkens back to Measure of a Man, whether it's, you know, Conundrum, when their brain, their memories are wiped out and they're tricked by an alien species to go fire on another one. And Picard at the end, he's like, I don't fire on defenseless people. Or even when it's Hugh from the Borg and they have an opportunity to destroy the Borg, and Picard even says, you know, I'm not going to destroy a whole species. A lot of it harkens back to this discussion on, you know, won't we be judged by how we treat that race? That one sentence of his is so true for reality, like everyday normal human life, but it plays out in so many more parts of Star Trek. I can't even count.
And, you know, again, this is part of our prepping for Picard series, right? So I want to call out something that is from the writer. So this episode was written by Melinda Snodgrass. It's actually her first television credit, which is really amazing. Like that's how she started this type of thing off, is really just impressive. But she actually said that, quote, everyone seems to view it as a Data script, but it's really a Picard script. Data is the catalyst, but the stress is all on Picard. And I think that that is, that in itself is telling, that the author, the writer of this episode, the person who made it exist, right? She saw it as a Picard story, as it being centered on his ability, his morals and ethics, his standing to do the right thing. It was on his shoulders.
Yeah, I mean, you were correct. And it's also got one of the most heartbreaking scenes in Trek when Riker gets told to represent the prosecutor, essentially. And remember, he's reviewing Data schematics and he finds the off switch. And he's got that big smile on his face, and then that smile immediately vanishes. It's because he just realized, he's like, oh, I found something that's good for the case. Oh, wait a second, Data's my friend. And you can see even the pain on Riker's face and the struggle that Picard's having when he's having a discussion with Guinan, and he's like, Riker almost convinced me. And that sets the tone for so much of what Picard is, and I fully expect us to see a lot of that. You know, if they're teasing new androids in the Picard show, I wouldn't be surprised if it, you know, if they're mining, you know, what Dr. McCoy say at, after Wrath of Khan or something, he's like, or after they stole the Enterprise, he's like, it's hard enough, we're going to be court-martialed and we'll have to spend the rest of our life mining Borite. It's like, if they turn, they turn all these androids into miners, and Picard, all of a sudden, he says, wait a second, who knows, they might hearken back to an episode like this where Picard says, I fought precisely against something like this to happen.
Yeah. No, I think you're totally right. I mean, I'm not sure what else there is to say about it. It's one of the most famous episodes of Star Trek. It's won a couple of different awards. It was actually nominated for Writers Guild of America Award for Best Episodic Drama. Most people know it at this point, and we've kind of hit the major areas of it about why it's a Picard episode. And so I guess, my question would be, if this really is a tie, if this really ties into the Picard show, if those androids that we see are really what they appear to be, what is something you might want to see kind of harken back to this? Is there any way you'd want it to connect, or I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I would love for it to connect, even if it's something as simple as, you know, the comment I just made, where maybe it's part of the story that Picard finds that he didn't know they were building androids like this. And then he does, and he realizes that this is not what the Federation stands for. The Federation doesn't create species just to use them. And even if it's as simple as, who knows, who the hell knows? Maybe the woman he meets in that show is Captain, I keep wanting to call her Captain Bouvier for some reason. I know that can't be right. But it turns out it's her 30 years later. And I think that would be a little extreme for them to do a direct connection like that. But it's not out of the realm of possibility. But they're not teasing androids right now for no reason, I don't think. They're teasing them on purpose.
That's interesting. So I guess something kind of, if you really like this episode, if you find it really enthralling and good, and you want to see something somewhat similar in TNG, Lol, the episode Lol is, or the episode Daughter, about Lol, or, okay.
The Offspring.
We're going to try this. The Offspring. Thank you. Let's try to use take three.
Which, by the way, I read a website today that said The Offspring is a skippable episode of Star Trek. I'm like, stop it. Your website lost entire credibility with me.
Oh, man. So that's somebody who just skipped it and never saw it, I guess. The Offspring is about when Data creates a daughter. And there are a lot of similar tones in that episode about what it means to have rights as a sentient being. And Picard, again, has to sort of like represent and support Data. And so there's some parallels. It may not be quite as heavy, it's not about slavery, but it is about reproductive rights and familial rights and that kind of thing, which is still pretty serious stuff.
Well, that one phrase of his in The Offspring where it's, you know, the state ordering a man to turn over his daughter, not on my watch. I'm like, if that was a modern government ordering one of us to turn over our child, I mean, the country might completely fall apart if that were to start happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think you're definitely right. But are there any other parts about this episode that you'd like to touch on?
No, I think we really kind of nailed it. Even although another one of the top episodes of Next Generation is Data's Day, where he's actually, mm-hmm. it's season 5 or 6, where he's actually drafting a letter to Commander Maddox. It might be season 4, actually. That doesn't matter. Later season, he's actually drafting a letter to Commander Maddox, who was the quote-unquote villain of Measure of a Man. So I like it when the shows do little throwbacks to something that you know, you might not catch it at first, but your brain definitely did.
Well, it's a cool moment, too, because it again shows that as far as Data was concerned, this wasn't about ego, or I think his line is like ego or vanity, I think is what he says in the episode, but it's not really like that for him. He truly thinks that he is doing the right thing for the work of Soong, and ethically and morally the right thing for any possible future androids that would come of the experiment. He doesn't dismiss Maddox's intelligence or abilities, and if anything, did find it promising. He just didn't think it was ready.
I agree. It's just, I mean, I think the episode pulls on those emotional strings, it pulls on those logic strings, and we get to see three of the main characters of Next Generation really built out in a single episode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I will always admire when they first introduced Commander Data at the stand, and they're playing, you know, Legion of Valor, Medal of Honor with clusters, and this, and this, and this, and I'm like, why isn't he like an admiral by now?
But, well, actually, I mean, it's interesting you bring that up, because, again, it's basically racism, you know, because people didn't trust an android captain. That even comes up in the show when he does take command of a ship during a fleet operation that the Enterprise is basically running. The crew at first don't trust him. They don't want to listen to his orders. They do other things. They don't follow his orders. And it's because they don't trust an android.
When he took command of the USS Sutherland, yep, during the Klingon Civil War, you're absolutely right.
And, you know, I think that's a big deal, this idea that because he doesn't have emotion like we do, he can't make the right decision. Whereas he's just probably the smartest person on the ship. He can think faster than anybody else on the ship. And he has a ton of experience that either he actually experienced himself, or he absorbed through materials that he was able to, quote, read, so to speak. You know, but people don't trust him because he's different, right? It's another allegory of racism.
Yep. They kind of carry that message throughout the rest of Star Trek. It plays heavily in Deep Space Nine, even between the relations between the Federation and Bajor, or the Federation and the Cardassians, and then later on with the Klingons and everybody else again. It's a sensitive subject, and Star Trek is, I think, one of the few shows that has, you know, truly approached it in a way that I think resonates with a lot of people.
I agree. I definitely agree. And I guess my last thought would just be that it's a good Guinan episode, even though she's barely in it. She has a very important part, and it just makes me want more of her character. I would love to see her return in Picard. Maybe they'd have to age her down because her species lives so much longer than ours does, but Guinan's always been one of my favorite characters in TNG, and I just feel like we never got enough.
Well, and even, I know, she records, what, The View? And she still looks great. She could still play the part of Guinan in a heartbeat, so hopefully mm-hmm. that relationship between Whoopi Goldberg and Patrick Stewart was, I mean, it was obvious. The two actors, they complemented each other well and had chemistry, so I would love for them to bring Guinan back.
Yep. And, you know, we know they're getting a season 2. They're already working on the pre-production for season 2. So maybe that'll be a good opportunity to bring her back in some way. I think it'd be a missed opportunity to leave her out.
I completely agree with you.
All right. Well, then I guess this is a good time then to close things out. We'll be covering multiple episodes moving forward. So we got, you know, we don't want these episodes to get too long, you know, we'll lose interest. But so next time, so we're going to take next week off. We'll be back on November 5th. So it's, again, it's important to know we've moved to Tuesday releases. It's different, but we're doing our prepping for Picard season 3, which includes Yesterday's Enterprise, Captain's Holiday, and Sarek. And we'll be moving part one of The Best of Both Worlds to our season 4 episode, which comes out the following week, which also includes Family and The Drumhead. So, and The Drumhead will probably reference this conversation a bit when we get to that one as well, I imagine.
You know, Best of Both Worlds, that rings a bell. I guess I have to go rewatch that. No, it's good to be back. This is a good time, I think, for you're right, for us to close out. But so go watch Measure of a Man. If you haven't seen it for some reason, go find it. Go buy it on iTunes or Amazon, or go watch it on Netflix.
Yes. Yes, I definitely agree. Or, you know, all of Star Trek, if you have CBS All Access to watch Discovery and Short Treks, all of the Star Trek stuff is also on CBS All Access. So you can catch it there as well. But I think that's going to be it. So, Greg, if people want to talk to you about Trek or whatever else, how might they do that?
Probably the easiest way is to find me on Twitter. Go by the handle of V_Bittersteel. You'll know it because my little Twitter icon is an animation of myself in a Starfleet uniform. So, with long hair. I'm one of the only unique Starfleet, like male Starfleet officers with extremely long hair. That's not a Klingon or a... I can't think of the president's race from Undiscovered Country, but I'll find it and I'll talk about it next week or in 2 weeks.
Fantastic. I am, of course, the Star Trek dude. My picture is very similar to Greg's. I'm in a different uniform, but it's the same artist who did both of those, which is cool. And of course, you can find us at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter or at Heroes Podcasts on Facebook or Instagram or heroespodcasts.com. Please subscribe to the show. We are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Google Play, you name it. Please leave us a review if your platform lets you do that. It's how people can find us. It's really the best way. And feel free to join our brand new Facebook group, Red Shirts and Runabouts. It's facebook.com/groups/redshirtsandrunabouts. We'll tweet the link as well so you can join us there and talk Trek with us. Thank you for joining us. We'll catch you in 2 Tuesdays.
See you then.